Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
The issue of deaths in maternity wards is something that sadly we've been hearing about all too often over the past few years. And Sean Rowlett is from Dromore West here in Sligo. And he's joined us this morning in the Roadcaster alongside his solicitor, who's Roger Murray, who has a huge experience in medical negligence cases. You have, Roger, this is your world, obviously. It's a sensitive world, isn't it?
Hugely sensitive, Ryan. And I suppose the important thing is to bear tribute to the courage that it takes to complain about a medical incident and to take action in relation to it. The man sitting here to my right is nothing short of an inspiration. He's got four young kids. His wife died in the most tragic circumstances. He was home with a newborn baby, effectively, and had to cater for himself. So he's in many respects, as I said, an inspirational figure, but not unfortunately unique in terms of my own experience, in terms of people trying to pick up the pieces after a medical incident.
Okay, well, let's talk to you, Sean, about your story, if you don't mind. It's a difficult story, but we'll talk about Sally, if you could. Can you tell us a little bit about her? The woman you fell in love with.
Yeah, Sally, myself and Sally met when we were 17 years old, and we're together for 9 years. And we built a house and got married, and we had three kids.
Yeah.
And she was a wonderful mother, wonderful wife, a good friend, and she'd do anything for myself with the kids, and very good family person, and loved her family around her, and she'd done everything for her kids. You know, she was...
It was a happy family.
Happy family,
I've
yeah.
met two of your children this morning. They're gorgeous.
Yeah, Neil and Abby is with me here, yeah.
That's right. And so I can understand why you'd have a house full of joy,
yeah.
essentially. And the first three children, no problems at all with childbirth?
With Leanne, everything was normal. And with Abby, the second child there, there was complications with high blood pressure.
Yeah.
And they brought Sally to intensive care just for monitoring at the time. And we're just told it's high blood pressure.
Okay.
And that was really it. We never advised on anything else. Just Sally recovered after about 24 hours. And she was sent home and everything was fine. And we went on to have our wee boy, Joseph.
Yeah.
Which everything was perfect. And then we went on to have our fourth child, which was the baby Sally. And, you know, we went to hospital and things didn't work out.
Were there any complications in the run-up to the
Maybe 4 weeks before Sally was, her due date, her blood pressure had been creeping up.
Yeah. And that's, again, this blood pressure you mentioned before was an
yeah.
issue. Yes.
And because, like, we found out since that, you know, she had HELLP syndrome with Abby, and that she should have been kept in hospital that time for close monitoring,
yeah.
and induced, and then, you know, not to let her go full term. And, you know, when you know, went to hospital, things just fell to pieces, and then.
Can we, as difficult as it might be, and I appreciate it is, but if you wouldn't mind taking us to that day where you had to go into Sligo Hospital on the day of the birth, was it tricky from the start?
No, that day, we're actually home a normal Sunday and or normal Saturday evening, and we had a wee fellow. Joseph was two at the time, and yeah. we spent that day getting the room ready for the baby coming home and moving him into a new bed and stuff, and everything was normal. That evening we had dinner and stuff, and I was working in Dublin at the time, so I used to leave at 3:30 in the morning. So I went to bed early, and about 11:30 Sally called me and said, you know, she's getting pains. And I was delighted because, you know, I was at home and stuff like that. So we sat and had a cup of tea in the bed, and Sally didn't want going in too soon, you know. So then the time came when we had to go. So we called a relative to come and mind the kids. And just before we left, Sally went into each room and kissed the three kids and said, you know, good night, we'll see them tomorrow. And I still can see that image stays with me, you know.
Well, I'm not surprised. Yeah. It's because there's something beautiful about the image too,
yeah.
Sean, if
and,
I may say.
Then went for Sligo, we called a half an hour ahead and says we're on the way, and we're in, everything was fine. Sally went to the maternity ward, and I went to park the car and went up, and she was sitting in the bed and a few nurses around her and that, so everything seemed normal at that stage. But then there was a few issues around, you know, epidurals and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and about 15-20 minutes later all hell broke loose, you know, everyone started panicking, and I asked what was wrong, and they told me the baby's heartbeat had dropped. So they said, we need to get to the theater and get the baby out. And we brought Sally to the theater, and then the baby had been delivered, and I walked into the theatre, and Sally had been holding the baby on her chest, and you know, the baby had been born with cleft lip, which we had known from maybe 3 months previous. And first thing, we didn't know if it was cleft lip and palate. And first thing Sally asked me, oh, has the baby a cleft palate? So I asked one of the nurses, and she explained that it was just cleft lip, which was minor, you know, minor enough.
Yeah.
So she smiled and she was happy. And then I remember, you know, we were all, Sally had red hair, and we were always slagging about the red hair, but, you know, the baby had red hair, and she says, at least I got my red head now, you know. So then shortly after that, things went downhill, and Sally went to the ICU for monitoring. And I remember going in around 4:30, and I knew that things weren't good. So I asked the consultant what was wrong, and the consultant told me that, you know, that everything was fine, and, you know, that Sally was just having a baby, that everything was fine. So she told me to go home and that Sally would be up having breakfast in the morning, but I didn't go home because I knew there was something wrong.
Was that an instinct thing for you, having been told? Was that instinct?
I thought she was in the, when she was in ICU, that she was in the best place, and that you knew what they were doing, and that. And
so you didn't go home?
No, I didn't go home. I stayed in the gear room, and I crept back in again around 5:30, and just flew around the bed, and I was actually told to leave the room again, but I just feel my last few hours of Sally was taken from me, you know.
You were asked to leave the room?
Yeah.
Did you comprehend what was happening at the time?
I knew, because I was speaking to Sally and she wouldn't answer me, and I knew that things weren't right, because it's like everybody, you know your loved ones better than anyone, and if they're not right, you know they're not right, but...
And what was happening?
She was just getting weak and not speaking and stuff like that to me, and not answering what I asked her.
Sorry, yeah, please.
Her blood pressure was completely uncontrolled.
Yes.
It was beyond, through the roof in terms of its abnormality. It was 209 over 93 on her admission to the unit, and the normal blood pressure in pregnancy is 140 over 90.
Right.
So effectively, one of the medics who I consulted in relation to Sean's case said that's basically like keeping a tyre on a car overinflated for a considerable period of time. So if you don't control the blood pressure, you run the risk that there could be a blowout. And to put it crudely, that's what happened here with Sally. She had a bleed in the brain, tragically, because the blood pressure was uncontrolled. It remained high. There was a recognition that the high blood pressure needed to be controlled, but unfortunately, insufficient efforts were made to bring the blood pressure down.
So if we return, thanks for that, Roger, Sean, to that morning, and you were looking at Sally through the army of people that were around her. Did you get to say goodbye to her? Did you get to reassure her?
I hadn't. She got the last words I spoke with Sally was after the baby was delivered. I asked her what she wanted to call the baby, because Sally had picked the name Shauna, and she couldn't even answer me that. When I asked her what she wanted to call the baby, she couldn't answer me. So that stage I knew there was something seriously wrong, because I knew she had the name picked, but I just wanted her to tell me.
When were you told the most awful news?
I was told about 6:30 in the morning. I was told that Sally had a brain hemorrhage, and to contact family immediately, because I had been in the hospital on my own until that time, and then I'd contact family, and I knew at that stage that something had been seriously wrong when the family had to be called. You know, and the family all came, and then they had the family around for that day and that night. And we're told by 11 o'clock that maybe she might be transferred to Beaumont, but it didn't happen. And, you know, they done the tests later on today, and we knew at that stage that things were, Sally wasn't going to recover.
So when did she pass away ultimately?
She passed away the following day, on the 5th. So the night before she passed away, then I was sitting by her bedside on my own for a little while. And, you know, I hadn't been looking at her, and I just wanted to see if anything good would come out of this terrible situation that we felt ourselves in. And I just looked at her and says, you know, maybe we could donate her organs and help somebody out there. So I asked one of the nurses, and she said, look, leave it with me, I'll come back to you. And at this stage, I hadn't really consulted Sally's family about it, and we hadn't carried donor cards or nothing. So the nurse came back to me, and she says, we can donate her organs. So after that, then sort of basically just getting ready for organ donation, and then I had to bring the three of the kids into the hospital and say goodbye.
That must have been.
And yeah, I put them up on the bed to give her a hug, and that was.
Yeah, I can listen. You don't have to go on to too much detail, because that's anyone listening to that will understand that that's just too heartbreaking for words. you had to say goodbye to Sally, obviously. Yeah. And you know what's so difficult about your story, Sean, is you were going in to celebrate a new life, and yet you walked out of that experience with your wife yeah. gone. How did you cope in those hours?
It was very hard at the time, you know. I was always an outdoor person. You know, I worked outside, and Sally always worked in the house and done the housework and the cooking and cleaning, and I never had to do it, you know.
Yeah.
As for, you know, when after Sally's passing, they kept the baby in the hospital for a week, and Sally was very, very well cared for in the hospital by the nurses, and they gave her great care, and you know, I have to say that nurses were very good to me, and you know, and they've been very good all along, and you know, they do a great job in there in the hospital, and I like this isn't something to be, I am not throwing the blame at them in any way. Maybe brought the baby home, and
how old were the other children at this point?
Joseph was 2, Abby was 5, and Leanne was 7.
And how do you tell, or you know, living in existence with these children, with their mum gone, how do you tell them or try and help them adjust to the new reality?
It's the only way I'd tell them that, you know, this mummy wasn't coming home, and tried to explain the best way I could at the time, but at the time I couldn't really talk about Sally to them either, you know, because, you know, you break down trying to explain stuff to them. And then after about a week, we brought the baby home to the house, and as they, like, I was handling the baby in the hospital, and I never made bottles. Yeah, I would have fed the baby the occasion, you know, the odd occasion at home, and changing nappies, very few and stuff, but not that I wouldn't want to do it, it was done for me, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
So I was handed this, and at the time, I, you know, there was loads of help around, but I sort of felt like they were my kids, and I wanted to do them, you know, I wanted to do it, and I felt that I wasn't a proper dad unless I'd done this for them, you know. I had help coming and going, you know, and stuff like that, and as, you know, people come in and show me, make bottles to feed the baby, because the baby had cleft lip, it used to take nearly 2 hours to get the milk into the baby.
It was
baby.
A bigger ordeal than the regular baby, as you
Yeah, it wasn't like a regular feed.
Right.
And, but we just sort of carried on a bit to help here and there, and I remember one occasion I brought Sally for her first spin to Sligo, and I packed the bag, I had my nappies and my wipes and SMA and the whole lot, I had everything with me, and I said, go to Sligo for a spin, you know. So listen, baby started crying in the back, so I pulled over, I says, you know, I'd make the bottle or whatever, and they said, I had everything, but I had no bottle, you know. So,
listen, you had other things on your mind. Yeah, so I think, you know, you were addled.
I stopped at a few chemists, and they didn't sell the bottle, so I ended up having to drive to the hospital, and I went upstairs into the maternity ward, and the nurses, you know, I went in and they gave me some bottles, but it's just... I learned the hard way, and I didn't forget it anymore. So.
No, I'd say.
It got easier as time went on, you know, and you learned different things. And
how are you doing these days?
I look doing grand, you know. The kids keep me going, and I have to get up for them in the morning.
Yeah.
And, as I said before, and I put them to bed at night, and you're sitting on your own in the house at night. It's very hard, and you know, I miss simple things in life, you know, like sitting down watching a bit of telly and maybe Chinese at the weekend and going out for the odd meal. I don't do that anymore, and I find it very difficult to.
They are the things we take for granted every single day, you know.
Yeah, so the simple things in life, you know, you miss, and you're going on holidays and things like that, but I just try and keep things as normal as possible for the kids.
Tell me about the letter the children wrote, the gorgeous letter in their little writing. It got a lot of attention, as you know.
It did get a lot of attention, and that morning, I remember getting up, getting ready for going to meet the Minister Leo for Agcare that morning, and I had two letters in my hand from two other family members. And Leanne and Abby were sitting down at breakfast and just, you know, trying to explain where I was going and about the letters and stuff, and they just said, you know, can we write one? So I said, well, yeah, fair enough, you can work away. So two of them sat down there and they started writing. Leanne done the writing and Abby helped her.
Can you read it for us? Yeah. It's a beautiful in the little handwriting.
To Minister Leaver, we miss our mum so much every day. Can you please make sure this can never happen to any other mum again and make our hospitals safe? Signed, Leanne, Abby, and Joseph, and baby Sally. That morning was just a very simple letter. I didn't think too much of it, but it has done the rounds, and then I've got thousands of messages about it from all over. Yeah.
What are people saying? Because it's a very affecting letter. It's such a simple... You had two letters in your hands from family members that were probably quite complicated and maybe a few pages long. That has more impact in three simple sentences written with a pencil than any amount of reams.
when I met the minister, you know, I handed him the letter and he picked up that letter and he read it and he paused for a minute or two and then he read it a second time and he was shaking his head, like it did really hit a chord.
This is Minister Radker.
Yeah, Minister Radker, yeah. And I felt when he read that our meeting did go very well with him as well, and I explained everything to him that I've been through. And
what did you want him to do? What did the girls want him to do?
Well, basically, what I want him to do is, you know, we say in a situation like mine where you leave the hospital and you bore a baby.
Yeah.
And you have three small kids at home. And looking back on it, I feel I was a danger for myself and my kids because I was grieving at the time and yes. I had a lot going on in my head.
Yes.
And getting up every 2 hours trying to feed the baby. And
yeah.
I was tired, I was exhausted, and I didn't know what had hit me. And looking back on it, I just feel it wasn't right. And I had no, from the system, I had no help. But after a few weeks, I fought for home, like help in the house. And they granted me 7 hours home help a week, which I got 1 hour every morning from a lady, a local lady, and she came in for the hour every morning.
Was that useful to you, or is that negligible in the size?
The lady was very good. She came in and do the home help, but home help is something where people around looking after elderly people in the area, and I felt that, that even though this woman was doing a good job,
different needs.
Yeah. The kids were young, and their mother had passed on, and they were all of a sudden they had this strange lady coming into the house, and the hour in the morning, like the lady come in, you have a chat. She, you know, if the baby was ready to feed, she'd feed the baby and get the kids ready for school and stuff like that. But then after a couple of weeks, I felt that the hour was no good to me. So I asked the lady, would she do 7 hours together? That would give me time to go out maybe for a walk or a cycle or whatever.
Simple things, like you say.
And we done that for about 2 weeks. And I was contacted by the home help and it says, you're not allowed to do that. That this isn't a babysitting service.
So, did they use that language?
Yeah, they used that language and they told me that basically, I said, this is the easiest way for me, 7 hours together. At least I can go out and do something. And at the end of the phone call, I told them I didn't need their help any longer.
You just said to hell with you?
Yeah, so they followed up on it and they came back to me begging me to take it back. I didn't take back 7 hours.
And why did they beg you to take it back?
Because I felt maybe they realised that they had done the wrong thing.
They spoke to a man who'd been through what you've been through and said, this is not a babysitting service, which actually is disgusting.
Yeah, which in my eyes it was. But, you know, I feel this need for, which it likes me coming home from the hospital, that there's someone there at the end of the phone that can come in and do maybe 7 or 8 hours a day, you know, help with the kids and then do the different things that's been done with homework and stuff like that. It's just, there's nobody there. If this happened, it's like tomorrow morning again. There's nobody there to do this.
What's the upshot of that engagement? Did they give you anything in the end, or did you agree on something? Or?
Yeah, we agreed. The minister did say that there is going to be something put in place where there is somebody there to, if someone finds themselves in my situation, where there is someone there to come to the house and give you full-time care or whatever is needed.
You see, this is why you are, Roger, as solicitor here, are so in awe of Sean. Because it makes great sense now we've heard the story and it's in totality. Because you're the little guy, if you'll excuse the expression, who took on the big thing, the system, courtesy of your sidekicks, the gorgeous children, and you won. That's amazing, Roger.
It's an incredible story, Ryan. It really is.
Some courage.
Absolutely. The courage that this man shows in the face of adversity.
Yeah.
Many parents have daily struggles and the way Sean copes with everything that life has thrown at him is nothing short of inspirational. I have to say, unfortunately, Ryan, I think that Sally's case shows that we're reaping the bitter harvest of the seeds sown effectively during the recession in the context of cutbacks in services. After Sally's inquest, one of the experts who gave evidence, Dr. Peter Boylan, said that there were structural and fundamental problems with the service. In other words, that you have a situation where locum doctors can't be tracked down. There's a very high turnover of staff. Don't get me wrong, Sean would be the first to say the people at the front line are doing their level best. The nurses treated them with compassion and empathy, and people are genuinely doing their best in circumstances where there have been cutbacks. But I think the patient safety suffers, Ryan, and I think we need to look at a nation at how are we protecting the women of this country? How are we protecting the children that have yet to be born? Have resources been put in appropriately into maternity services? And is the system safe? Because Sally's case tells us that, unfortunately, in certain circumstances, it's not.
No. Well, honestly, I'm I have deep admiration for what you've done, and I can only wish you happiness and good luck in going into the future. And as you say, you've got gorgeous children, and they're lucky to have you. So thank you for coming to share your story with us today, Sean. And Roger, thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.